Blog Talk Radio.
Live from Hollywood, it's rated LGBT Radio, starring your host, Rob Watson!
Good evening, you are listening to Rated LGBT Radio. I am Rob Watson, and tonight we have a very important show. We are reacting to news this week that came out via the New York Times that the Trump administration legally and probably morally is essentially declaring war on transgender Americans. And what I mean by that is legally wanting them to not exist at all, defining them out of existence legally and ethically and with any due process, et cetera. Tonight we are going to discuss that, what it means, what can be done about it, the effects, et cetera, and the movement against it. On board, I have my co-host, Brody Levesque, expert journalist and co-producer of the show. And also we have our very special guest, analyst and activist, Bryn Tannehill, who will give us a good load of commentary on this issue. So without further ado, I do want to bring Brody on and see if we have any other news pointers we want to take care of at the top of the hour here. Brody, good evening.
Good evening, Rob. The last 72 hours, of course, have been extremely busy, particularly for American law enforcement, as they have been dealing with attempted political assassinations of two former presidents of the United States, a Secretary of State, a former Attorney General, and two members of the U.S. House. In addition, bombs were sent that would have threatened an actor and a few other people, and I think we're up to 10 bombs now or something like this. Late word from Washington, federal law enforcement is narrowing their search down to Florida. They're fairly certain that all 10 of the devices were delivered through the U.S. Postal Service, and so they're focusing their search on that. The principal discussions that have been going on, obviously, for the last 24-hour cycle have been about just the fact that this happened and the incivility and the rhetoric and, quite frankly, the complete breakdown and dysfunction within the American political process, which has occurred. There's been a lot of, speculation and blame placed on the right wing for these 10 devices. And I think it's a little premature since law enforcement doesn't really know exactly where these things, came from. However, because virtually all 10 of the individuals targeted have been strident out critics, very outspoken critics of the president and the administration, and of course, the president's rhetoric, one could probably draw the line that, whoever did this more than likely was in fact inspired by the president. Trump himself, quite frankly, did not address this very well in any public comments he made yesterday. And as a matter of fact, when he had his political rally in Wisconsin last night, it was the same old, same old, same old. There wasn't much changes, except for the fact that he went after those of us in the media again, and he did it today as well. At this point, there is a breakdown in the political process, and it has now gotten dangerous. For those of us in the media, major companies, including the one that I work for, have started basically case hardening their security. I talked to colleagues who work, for example, at 30 Rock in New York, which, of course, is home to NBC News and MSNBC, and they have tripled their security. The folks at CBS, same thing. As a result of the bomb that was delivered to CNN, they have now case-hardened all of their bureaus, including their Atlanta headquarters. I think it's kind of telling that the American political process has now broken down to this degree. And the thing that, you know, needs to be made, and I've heard this argument that, you know, not all Americans this and not all Americans this, that, and the other thing. I'm going to say this. Half of your country is not saying what they should be saying to stop this nonsense, and that half of the Republicans. We have heard silence from congressional Republicans and leadership. We've heard plenty from the pundits. We've heard plenty from the people saying false flag, red flag, this, that, and the other thing. But we're not hearing anything from the people that really count. And more importantly, we're not hearing anybody really powering down a sitting president who, quite frankly, has been the one who's promulgated the type of conditions, almost a petri dish, if you will, of hate and hostility in, quite frankly, a very fascist way. You know, a lot of people draw comparisons to Hitler. That's unfair to Hitler. He did it better. Trump is basically a watered-down version of Mussolini. And everything that you see this man doing, everything that you see this man, you know, talking about is just, it's authoritarian, it's fascist. There's no way to put lipstick on this one, okay? And I'm not going to anymore. You know, as a journalist, I've seen my colleagues killed, murdered, come under fire in horrific ways, triple that we had ever seen before. And I'm talking about more than Khashoggi. I'm talking about more than what happened at the Capitol Gazette. I'm talking more about what happened with Jim Acosta. I'm talking about more than our colleague who was literally, you know, assaulted by a United States congressman in Montana that then the president of the United States praised. Atmosphere. This incivility. This president has given license to someone, be it far left, far right, or just nuts, to take it upon themselves to mail bombs. Law enforcement isn't saying much about these devices. I will note, every one of those devices was a functional explosive. There's a lot of speculation about, well, they didn't go off and they didn't kill anybody. Well, maybe they weren't designed to. Maybe what they were designed to do is to scare, to intimidate, to right. say, we're here and we'll get you. And if that was the case, then they succeeded.
Brody,
moving along
on that
to
point,
another subject. Yeah.
Well, wait, before you move on to another subject, on that point, because I think that's pretty important, do you have any information on whether, in fact, the devices were set to go off and we've 10 cases where we were lucky that none of them did, or were they more, in your opinion, designed, as you just described, as, you know, terrorism-inducing?
My conversations with federal law enforcement, which includes my sources in the ATF, the FBI, and the NYPD, none of them were willing to speculate as to the fact that these things didn't go off. Okay? So I'm not going to speculate. We don't know. Now, they
okay,
may be
so we don't
determining
know.
At this point that those things were designed a certain way, but at this point we don't know why they didn't go off. You know, and there's one more thing that needs to be added here, with the possible exception of the Soros bomb. You know, the other ones were screened by the extremely competent folks of the United States Secret Service and the NYPD, and my hat is off to the U.S. Secret Service. Once again, they've proven, you know, their value as an agency to the people of the United States and the protectees that they're responsible for. And, you know, my hat is off to the U.S. Secret Service, as it is to the FBI, the forensic investigators, and also the men and women of New York's finest.
Right. And I do
I
do want to point out one, just to emphasize one part of this that happened, was the day of when most of the bombs were discovered, the White House did put out a statement that seemed appropriate, an appropriate response to the situation. The next day, however, the president got on his Twitter feed and sent out probably the most reprehensible and inappropriate tweet, you know, attacking the media again and accusing them of basically creating the situation, which is a little bit ironic since his main target of that was one of the targeted victims.
I mean, the president of the United States should have gotten out in front of this thing. The president of the United States should have called the former presidents themselves and Vice President Biden and the former attorney general and the members of the House, no matter how much he didn't like them. Okay, that's the presidential thing to do. Okay, he didn't do any of that. As a matter of fact, the first statement came from Press Secretary, you know, Sarah Huckabee, which was kind of quite frankly lame. Then Vice President Mike Pence made a statement, which Trump retweeted and said, I wholeheartedly agree. This guy is as far from being a president of the United States as an iguana with a bad case of hemorrhoids strolling down Miami Beach. Tomorrow at 10 o'clock.
I think we're
going to
sit with that analogy. Yeah.
Tomorrow
Got to muse on that one. Go ahead, sorry.
Tomorrow at 10 o'clock at Washington's National Cathedral, Judy and Dennis Shepherd and their son Logan will be putting their son and brother to rest. And I think it's kind of appropriate that Matthew Shepherd will be interned at the National Cathedral. It's a beautiful, beautiful cathedral. It sits on a hill, literally, overlooking the city of Washington. And I think it truly is something that is more than just symbolic. And I'm really happy for the Shepherds. And I think that, you know, with the donation of Matthew's belongings that were given to the Smithsonian Institution's Bering Center at the Museum of American History today and tomorrow's interment, I think it closes one chapter on the Matthew Shepherd story and opens up a new one. But as Judy and Dennis both indicated in an interview with the Washington Post earlier in the week, you know, they had initially felt at the 20-year mark they'd be able to probably either close the foundation down or move direction. And unfortunately, given the atmosphere of what's going on, including what we're going to be discussing here very shortly with Bren, it's simply not possible to do that, which makes me segue into the overall. Transgender rights are very much under attack. My friend and colleague, Mike Wavers from the Washington Blade, wrote a piece that the State Department did a few hours ago. The State Department's now saying that they have no intention of going after the UN Charter on Transgender Rights, but The Guardian UK is reporting otherwise. As you know, the transgender right issue in employment and other things is up at SCOTUS. We have the Trump administration has basically declared war on the trans community. So I think that, you know, looking at it, it really is tragic that on one hand, we've come a long way since Matthew was murdered. But at the same token, it seems like we're treading water and going backwards with the transgender community and, quite frankly, even, you know, the youth. And I'll be honest with you, the American nation has a cancer on the body politic, and the cancer on the body politic are the evangelical and Pentecostal Christians that control the Republican Party. They're a minority. They're actually a very small group of people, but they're extremely vocal. They're extremely well-funded. And unfortunately, they are in power and control. And, you know, they have made it their mission all right, to basically marginalize and take away and strip the humanity of anyone that's not lily white and evangelical Pentecostal like they are. And unfortunately for those of us that are sitting out here in the LGBTQI community, one of their biggest cheerleaders is sitting in the old executive office building in the office of the Vice President of the United States. You know?
Right.
So that's where we're at, and that's kind of my look at the news for now, Rob.
Okay. Brody, before we bring Brent on, can you give a little more definition to the New York Times piece and exactly what was uncovered with the intention of the Trump administration, what exactly they intend to do?
A memorandum was written by a gentleman at Health and Human Services who had initially worked for the Heritage Foundation alongside a gentleman by the name of Ryan T. Anderson. This particular gentleman wrote a memo that essentially stated that the Trump administration was only going to accept a person's gender identity based on the genitalia they had at birth, period, end of discussion. This has been a long talking point of the Christian right, the people I just mentioned. The Heritage Foundation, by the way, is filled with them. Ryan Anderson, okay, who is a veritable walking, talking piece of human excrement, who spews out pseudoscience that has to do with the trans community. He wrote a just disgustingly ownerless book full of lies about the trans community, When Harry Met Sally. These are not scientists. These are not medical doctors. These are theocrats. And these people take their rather disturbed and twisted views of their interpretation of Christianity and have decided that if you don't have a penis when you're born and you don't have a vagina when you're born, well, that's just too bad because you're either one or the other. They don't recognize the concept. The New York Times piece talked about this memo this idiot wrote that was circulating through the government, and it was going beyond HHS, is the basis for a lot of the discriminatory practices that we are going to be seeing. And we're going to be seeing them in principle because of the fact that the Republicans that are in power, including this president, have now made it possible for the court to rule that way. And I'm not talking about just SCOTUS. I'm talking about circuit courts of appeals. I'm talking about U.S. district courts. This is now a battle. And for the trans community, it's a battle for their very lives. These people want to erase transgender individuals. They don't get the fact that it's really simple. It's not rocket science. You don't have to be an academic to understand this. You have to understand one concept. Mother Nature occasionally screws it up, and you get a boy in a girl's body and vice versa. It's simple. It doesn't predicate itself on who's got a penis and who's got a vagina. But these Christian supremacists who are in power, these so-called good people of God, okay, these slime molds have decided that it's their right to persecute and prosecute anyone that doesn't believe in their screwed up philosophy, and they'll decide what's scientifically accurate or not. And that's what the New York Times piece was about. And if I sound like I'm pissed, it's because I really am.
Yeah, no, I hear you. We're going to bring Brent on in a minute. I do want to add one point of view. I actually don't look at it that Mother Nature screwed up in any way. Mother Nature makes diversity, and that's the reality. What screwed it up is a society that is forcing everything into binaries and has a very myopic view that cannot a thing in between. I think we need the diversity. I think that's valuable, and every person who expresses their individuality in that spectrum is exactly as they should be, in my opinion, and they should be recognized as such. With that, I want to welcome to our show Bryn. Bryn, welcome to the show. First of all, I can't imagine the week you've had. Brody and I are pissed, And like I said, I can't imagine the emotions you must be feeling. And so I just have to ask, how are you?
I'm okay. Thank you very much for having me on again. I kind of had my my moment of what the hell 6 months ago, and now it's just kind of tracking the changes as they're happening, tracking what's going on, observing what the Trump administration is doing and how they are changing their strategy and tactics as things go to achieve their end state goals. And when I say the Trump administration, I really mean Pence. I'm going to be blunt. This sort of wonky, in the weeds, gender policy, OPM, EEOC, Department of Justice, Department of Health and Human Services stuff, this isn't Trump's bag. This falls squarely on Pence and his associates at the Heritage Foundation and the Family Research Council and the Alliance Defending Freedom. This, that's their bag, is the down-in-the-weeds policy and legal stuff. And they do actually have a plan. Somebody at GQ said this is pointless. This is just about sadism. And it's not. There is a method to their madness. They are like the Cylons. They have a plan. They are carrying through. They see what their end state is. And what their end state is actually kind of terrifying because it has a very clear historic precedent.
Bryn, you wrote an article. An article, The Transgender Question, which has not been published yet, but I think you go into that plan. Can you flesh that out for us a little bit on what you see that being and the historical precedent?
So when you look at all the things that the Trump administration is doing, and you consider it from the context of what their end state goal is, it all makes sense. You start to be able to connect A to B to C, to see how something you're doing now connects to the next thing they're going to do, which gets them to their goal. Their goal, unfortunately, is to create a set of legal and cultural and policy conditions that make it functionally impossible for transgender people to function in the United States as an out transgender person. And it kind of revolves around three basic concepts, one of which is make sure that transgender people cannot use a bathroom. If you can't use a bathroom, any bathroom, either male or female, you can only use gender neutral bathrooms. You're very, very severely limited in how you can function on a day-to-day basis. Next thing is that they want to rule, get a ruling that transgender people are not protected by any existing federal law. They want to tear down existing circuit court decisions that transgender people are protected by Title VII of the 1964 Civil Rights Act and Title IX of the 1972 Educational Amendments Act. And they're working very hard to do that. And there's a challenge right now. The Department of Justice just this week issued a letter to SCOTUS, a briefing to SCOTUS, saying that they held that transgender people were not protected by Title VII. The third piece of this puzzle, the expansion of RFRA to the maximum extent possible, and RFRA meaning Religious Freedom Restoration Act. They want to make sure that existing laws have a gigantic religious exemption carved out for them, that being able to discriminate against transgender people is a constitutionally protected right that cannot be infringed upon. And they want to extend that just beyond bakeries and business owners wanting to discriminate. They want to expand that to employees. And I know for a fact the Family Research Council and the Alliance Defending Freedom are actively seeking plaintiffs to argue that their corporations, that their employees of corporations to argue that they've been discriminated against because they haven't been allowed to discriminate against other transgender employees, or that their religious beliefs have been compromised by having to use a bathroom that a transgender person might use, or that they had to use a transgender person's pronouns or something like that. They're looking for impact litigation to carve out a RFRA exemption for employees. and force employers to accommodate religious beliefs that are innately hostile to LGBT people in the workplace. What that ends up looking like is a society where transgender people can't go to school, they can't go to work. If they do manage to get to work somehow, they can't use the bathroom, they can be discriminated against, and that people at work, they can't be protected by their employers, they can't be protected by the government, and that the people that they work with can make interesting demands of employers, like, I can't breathe the same air as this person because my God says so. And employers would have to go, well, we have to accommodate that. Sorry. And this does have historical precedent, and I'll let you segue into that.
Well, before we go there, because we will, what do they get out of this scenario? What is the Pence Inc.? And I agree with you completely that this seems to be the methodical plan, including the trans ban from the military, the stripping of civil rights, doing this in the place where transgender people are extremely vulnerable, i.e., the elementary and high schools and middle schools, where kids are very at risk for suicide and other issues like that. What do these people get out of that misery? What is
the same thing that Hitler did, the same thing the Nazis and Hitler and all of the fascists did in the 1930s and 40s. They take a class of people they don't like and they exterminate them. It's a story as old as time. The Americans did it with the genocide of the Native Americans. They went after them because they were heathens, because they couldn't be converted to Christianity. So they pushed them onto reservations, and then when that didn't work, they murdered them. Remember Wounded Knee? This is an old, old pattern. I'm sorry, but there is one root cause to this, all right? It's that twisted, immoral, evil version of Christianity and these screwed up people that run it. Now, Bryn may disagree with me, but their end game is these are people they don't like. They would just as soon see us, you know, dead.
Al, I'm not going to disagree with Brody.
No, most don't. Most don't step up there. but what historical precedent, besides the ones that Brody was talking about, are you seeing in your article and the patterns here?
So in the midterm, the goal of an America where transgender people essentially can only exist as transgender people inside their houses or in Canada or some other country that hasn't morally legislated them out of existence, is remember what the Trump campaign motto is. It's MAGA, Make America Great Again. And for the Republican Party, there's really three kind of components to the base. There's your moderate Republicans, which are about 40%. You've got the evangelical Christians who form somewhere around 50%. And the rest are the hard alt-right, which are more secular. However, what this ends up being is about something in excess of 60% of the Republican Party is extremely hostile to transgender people. Transgender people are the epitome of everything that's what's making America not great these days. For the religious right, they regard it as a moral duty handed to them by God to make America a place too inhospitable for transgender people to survive as people who are out. So that's what they gain. It's nothing that they act that's tangible that they gain. It's simply their ideology believes that America is better off without transgender people, that God does not want transgender people to exist in America. And they're going to do everything they can to make sure that that happens, to force them out. The problem is that there is historical precedent for taking a kind of despised, tiny minority and oppressing them until they cannot function in society. They can't hold a job. They can't go in public. They can't go to movie theaters. They can't go to plays. They can't go to spas. They can't use bathrooms. They can't serve in the military. They've been purged from federal government. They can't get an education at public schools. that they've been deprived of their civil rights, that they're no longer protected by the same civil rights as anybody else in the country. You can't pass laws to protect them, and that people have an inherent right to discriminate against them. And Brody nailed it on the head. It is pre-war Germany, which did every last one of these things to drive Jews out of the marketplace, drive them out of schools, drive them out of the workplace, to try and keep them inside their communities, inside their homes, and away from the rest of the German populace. And the goal was to either make them disappear within Germany or to get them to try and emigrate. The problem is that Britain figured out what was going on fairly quickly and closed off Palestine. And that escape valve closed for a lot of Jews. So they ended up going to other places in Europe. And by 1938, they used the non-recognition of Jews to revoke their as citizens of Germany, to revoke their passports. And that effectively cut off any last migration of Jews prior to the outbreak of World War II.
And sadly, the Americans did it as well, too, Bryn. Remember, the FDR administration,
St. Louis,
same thing.
I'm well aware of that ugly piece of American history of where we were not any more tolerant than anyone else. That was not a moment where America showed itself to have better virtues than anywhere else in the world. Wish we could say otherwise, but so this is not a good thing. And this memorandum, the reason why I'm taking this more seriously than most people, is that even though in the short run it only really affects agencies that have interactions with Title IX, the idea that transgender people's genders and sex should not be recognized by the federal government is one part of the plan promoted by the Family Research Council, which in 2015 put out a 5-point plan to, as a general set of principles that would create the cultural genocide they want. And I don't have a better description of it. And one of which is non-recognition of transgender identities. Where does that go? Well, that starts getting into some really ugly things, like not recognizing the gender identity of federal workers who are transgender and transitioned years ago. And basically being able to say, no, you're a male. You will come to work dressed as a male and comport yourself as a male or you're fired. So basically getting to a point where you can give transgender federal employees an ultimatum of detransition or leave or you will be fired. Also, if they no longer recognize gender or sex marker changes, what happens to all the passports in the past that have had that? That starts getting really, really nastily close to 1938 when the Reich's Interior Ministry revoked all the passports. And they would have to go through a bunch of different steps to get to the point where they could do that. But a lot of the things that are necessary to accomplish them are being done now. They are tearing down Title VII protections. They're tearing down Title IX protections. They are tearing down OPM and giving its functions to the White House. They are tearing down the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission within the federal government by not appointing anyone to replace board members who are term limited out. They're down to 3 board members out of 5. By January 1st, they'll be down to 2. They can no longer form a quorum. By mid-2019, they'll be down to 1. The position of the general counsel at the EEOC is unfilled. It is going to be more and more difficult for the EEOC to protect transgender people going forward. And that's even assuming that the Trump administration doesn't pack it with loyalists like Severino. So a lot of the guardrails are down, and yes, some of the things that they could do can't be done yet, but when you look at the behind-the-scenes work being done, they're doing what it takes to move this forward in an orderly fashion on a time schedule.
I'm going to pick it up from Brent. As a reporter and as a senior editor and someone who covers politics, talking to my reporters, one of the things that has annoyed the hell out of me over the last 3 or 4 months when we've had discussions with folks in government and out of government, in Democratic congressional staffs, both houses, both the Senate and the House of Representatives, people out in the public chamber of commerce, were repeatedly being told, this can't happen in America. It's not going to happen. You're fear-mongering. No, we're not fear-mongering. What we're saying is, wake up and look at the reality of what is going on. The last 72 hours are a glaring slap in the face, and it really says, wake up. This argument that it doesn't happen in America is BS. It is happening in America. A small minority elected a narcissistic, authoritarian fascist, little more than a mafia don, who's hell-bent on reconstructing the American government the way he wants it. And he's getting away with it because the Republican Party is allowing it. They're the ones that are in control. And I'm not hearing a lot of Democrats making a bunch of noise about this. So these people that are saying it can't happen in America, I got news for you. I am sitting back, sipping my tea like that Kermit the Frog meme going, yeah, you think?
I mean, it's definitely happening. I would go back to, Bryn, what you were talking about in terms of, and I agree this is sort of a methodical process where the transgender community is being hauled out and exemplified in a horrific way. Having come from a lot of those traditions of the evangelical right and understanding that culture, I think the bigger target behind you is the woman population, because that is the biggest affront to the patriarchy and the male dominated make America great again vision. I mean, that's what has changed between the 50s, and which is sort of the epicenter that they seem to want to get back to, and today. The thing about the transgender community, because it isn't an equal beating. I mean, it is what they're doing now with a lot of the legal protections, et cetera, but the rhetoric is really a bigger attack on the male to female transition population than others. I mean, that is the big affront, is somebody who they see as being born a man, who has the audacity to be really identifying as a woman who they do not want to see as an equal, and that somehow has derided the male ego on a societal level. What, in terms of public visibility, can the transgender community do to reach the heart of the real American?
So that's a really tough question, because transgender people are so alien to the U.S. public. Depending on what polling data you use, anywhere between only 11 and 16% of Americans have a family member or close friend who's transgender. And that number drops off rapidly once you start getting into red states and rural areas. Transgender people tend to be clustered in urban areas, much like lesbian and gay people. And I think the only way we are going to make progress, unfortunately, isn't by simply appealing to innate sense of human decency. It's not by appealing to, well, I was in the U.S. Army. Why? How can you do this to me? A lot of German Jews went to Auschwitz saying, I fought for the Kaiser's army in World War I. How could you do this? That's not going to work. There has to be self-interest. And I think we need to start highlighting that if we go down, you're all coming with us. If transgender people can all be kicked out of the military because religious nutters decide that they're uncomfortable with trans people in the military, don't ask, don't tell, it's coming back. And it will be legal. And that's the thing, is the Family Research Council has been beating the drum to bring back don't ask, don't tell if this transgender ban succeeds in court. They're beating the drum. Jeff Sessions is meeting with ADF and trying to coordinate with them and hinting that they want ADF to start bringing impact litigation forward to bring back sodomy laws in the United States to overturn Lawrence v. Texas. If you overturn transgender protections under Title VII and argue that sex-based stereotypes can be used to discriminate against transgender people, it applies to cisgender people as well, which means Hopkins versus Price Waterhouse gets overturned, and you can start discriminating against women for not wearing that short mini dress, for not wearing high enough heels, for not wearing stockings, not wearing enough makeup, for not being feminine enough, for not being attractive enough. Hopkins versus Price Waterhouse was a huge case. And if you can, if we lose transgender protections under Title VII, it is going to absolutely gut the last 30-something years for women in civil rights under U.S. law in the workplace.
Agreed.
And in society. I think what you just said is exactly on target. I want to read a paragraph from your unpublished article. LGBT people, listen to your elders. They remember and they do not forgive. They lost an entire generation of gay men and transgender women to cruelty and indifference. Know your history. Pay close attention to what Republicans, the Alliance Defending Freedom, and the Family Resource Council are doing and what their goals are. Understand that everything they are doing is deliberate, calculated, and motivated by sheer malice and disgust directed at transgender people. Never forget that these actions have a purpose, to get us to 1938 for transgender people in America and open the door to 1941. When you do the call for LGBT people, and I'm assuming particularly millennials, to listen to your elders, what specifically do you want them to listen to?
What I want them to listen to is the people who survived the plague, the people who watched literally hundreds of their friends die while the government did nothing, did less than nothing, while the Christian right celebrated this death on a magnitude order than greater than Vietnam. We need iGen and millennials and younger Gen Xers to listen to the people who survived the plague years, who cared for those stricken during the plague years, and understand what is really in the hearts of the religious right, to understand what is really in the hearts of Republicans and conservatives who are absolutely beholden to the religious right, more so than corporations, more so than the military, and understand that it is possible, because we have seen this before, that we have had a government that was willing to let queer people die by the tens of thousands and not just ignore it, but celebrate it as God's vengeance.
Or
we
laugh
don't remember
at it,
that.
Press briefings.
And Brody was at the bloody press briefings where they were laughing at this. I wasn't there. I was 10 years old. But maybe I've done a better job of listening to my elders. Maybe I've done a better job collecting stories. Maybe I've done a better job networking. But these stories freaking haunt me, because I know what happened in Germany. I know what happened in 1985 and 86. And I'm watching closely what is happening today, even if it's complete political wonkery and inside maneuvering and legal wrangling. I see what they're doing, and why they're doing it, and where they're going. And if you're not afraid, you should be, because they know exactly what they're doing, whether you think they do or not.
No, I
think the other part of
that,
it, too.
Go ahead,
Brady. The other part of it, Rob, and Bryn, you and I have actually spoken about this many times, but, you know, it's always a cycle. And it's always the next boogie person or the next boogie man or boogie woman. You know, it's often said that, you know, those who do not learn from their history, and I'm paraphrasing, are doomed to repeat it. And that seems to be a national characteristic of the American nation. You know, these people in the religious right, the Christian right, they have to have the boogeyman. They have to have someone. They have to feel like they're the ones that are being persecuted so they can lash out. You know, in the 1920s, they were lynching black folks. During the civil rights movement, same thing. Interracial marriages were against, you know, the law because supposedly they were against God's word. You know, slavery. I mean, for Christ's sakes, the country was founded where in its constitution initially was written that a black person was three-fifths of a person. The Irish, the Chinese, the Japanese who were interred during the Second World War, the Germans who were interred during the Great War. Bryn's right. If we don't get across to the younger generations the fact that this goes on, particularly my generation and the older generation above me who survived the plague that was the AIDS crisis and remembered exactly how the American government and other governments treated us, you know, at the end of the day, There's no way to do this except stand on the tallest mountain or building and scream. The religious right does not recognize you as a human being, LGBTQI community. You're not human to them. You are some sort of disgusting, you know, satanic evil thing. I, for one, I'm over that. Okay? And when my friends like Bryn are undergoing this kind of trauma, it makes me heartsick and it makes me angry. But at the end of the day, Rob, she's right. It's about context,
well,
it's about history, it's about paying attention.
Well, as somebody who lived through the plague and did all that and was there for all of it, it makes me sickeningly reminiscent. Because I know what that was all about, and I remember the Pat Buchanan declaring a culture war at the Republican convention, and I remember the silence of the Republic or the Reagan administration, and all of the celebratory and dismissiveness of the powers that be throughout that time period. Bryn, what are the steps forward? What are the bridges to get through this?
So after I've laid out this absolutely horrific potential future, there are some off-ramps. One of the off-ramps is the upcoming election, where if we manage to take back the Senate and we get some decently rock-ribbed Democrats who are going to stop the court packing by the Trump administration, we can potentially slow this down significantly. If we take back the House, there will be investigations, particularly into the banning of transgender service members, which was fishy to begin with, and a lot of skullduggery going on. The White House will not admit who was involved in the writing of the study, but those of us in the know it was Family Research Council and ADF. And Ryan Anderson of the Heritage Foundation and a bunch of anti-transgender bigots. No actual doctors or psychologists or people who actually work with transgender people or interviewed them for deployment. That will help us get to the bottom of that, and that will help us in our court fight there, which is more important than you know, because the ability for the executive branch to single out and target transgender people in the United States, that's a frightening power. That's a huge power, and it should scare you. The other thing is that We still have a semi-functioning judiciary, which means that ACLU and Lambda Legal and others will be challenging these things that are put forward by the Trump administration as they come, and they will get tangled up in court for a couple of years, which is good because it gives us time to win the 2020 election. If we can remove Trump from office, that doesn't fix everything. We're probably going to suffer some absolutely horrific losses at SCOTUS, but it might, and it's going to be awful, but it might be survivable. And that's kind of the best case scenario, is a lot of the worst excesses of the Trump administration go away when his administration goes away and is no longer actively defending those positions in court, such as the transmilitary ban, such as the position that Title IX says that transgender kids in bathrooms is inherently hostile, things like that. Some of those positions might get torn down. But I'm going to warn you that if the Trump administration stays in place and continues to appoint justices and continues to push the agenda of ADF, Heritage and Family Research Council, yeah, we'd probably get 1938.
Agreed.
Well, yeah, as my commitment is, that won't happen to see 1938, whether we have to take the streets to protect you or whatever, I'm going down with you.
At that point, honestly, the best thing you can do for us is start a fund to help us get out of the country, to start shuttling people to the Canadian Embassy for asylum. That's really what we're down to.
Well, two points going back to what you described in terms of the AIDS crisis and that period that need to happen in society while we work towards politically and judicially resolving this is the science community needs to speak up loudly and talk about the real science of gender, and that information needs to be much more widely understood than it is now. And to your point, we need to have transgender visibility because those two things are the things that through the darkest days of the AIDS crisis, those are the paths that had to be taken in the mind of Americans to get understanding.
And you touched on something that's a good point. I have started to see agencies like the American Medical Association, American Psychiatric Association, American Psychological Association have really picked up the pace and really started to notice just how dire the threat is and become much more aggressive in releasing position statements in support of the transgender community in order to establish what the science really says. And they're way more proactive on this than they were just 3 years ago because these are doctors. These are people who recognize the fundamental threat to science. If we let people who feel a deep sense of antipathy to all kinds of science, unless it matches the worldview, represents to not just transgender people, but to humanity as a whole.
No, absolutely. Because to Brody's point, this is a small part of America. They are the ones in power. They're the tail wagging the dog. They're all of that. The place where this gets won is not to win them over, but it's to get the people who are, you know, that mushy middle, which is what our culture is based on. It's like every election goes to the undecided people and the independent people. And these people are the people, ironically, that are not so grounded in what they believe that they can be swayed at the last minute. Or, you know, it's sort of the least prepared get to make the final call. And what happens in this kind of situation is it is those people who have not yet met a transgender person or who is not really given it a whole lot of thought or it's not really part of their world. So they don't have a problem with it because it doesn't affect their insular little space. But as soon as it gets in there, then they see the right thing to do. And then they see justice. Then they see humanity. And so we've got to break through with those people. And, you know, and try to quiet the ones that are trying to drive them in the other direction.
So as a rule, in the past, getting straight people to care about LGBT issues and particularly transgender issues has been extraordinarily difficult. It only changes when they have a close family member or friend who is LGBT. So visibility is very important, but there just aren't that many of us compared to lesbians and gays. What I like, and going back to my original, one of my original points was that they do start caring when it's their gay kid that's going down next, or it's their daughter that's going to be forced to dress in some horrible way, or their wife that's going to be abused at work because she's not feminine enough or she's not dressing up for the boss enough. That's when it hits home, and we need to emphasize that what affects the transgender community when we lose civil rights, that degradation of civil rights for American citizens affects everybody downstream.
It does.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And I think also the women's movement and the Me Too movement, et cetera, they need to understand that the transgender atrocities, they're very close on that. You pointed out the LGBT rights are, which I totally agree, but the rights of women are right there up there too. They are in the crosshairs, and everybody needs to be realized if they can't get up enough compassion and empathy and just humanity for their transgender neighbor, but they're next. They're next.
If transgender people do not have bodily autonomy, women don't either. Cisgender
exactly.
women don't either.
Exactly.
Exactly.
I'm going to throw one last thought out here that, you know, needs to be, again, repeatedly hammered home. Bryn, you and I have talked about this. Rob, you and I have talked about this. To our listeners, you guys are the ones that are going to make the difference on this. No matter what happens, you have to be voting. You have to vote. You must vote. You're voting for people's humanity. You're voting for their human rights. This is not about politics. This is not about Democrat. This is not about Republican. This is about the right thing to do. And unless you're comfortable with the scenario that Brent and I have laid out, and you don't have a problem with that, and a bunch of goose-stepping morons carrying the cross and the American flag, then bless you all, but you have to get to the ballot box this year.
So, part of me wants to quote Indiana Jones in the Last Crusade. It tells me there's goose-stepping morons like yourself should try reading books instead of burning them. jokes aside, vote. Get out the vote. Get your friends to vote. Get your family to vote. If you can take a day off of work, do get out the vote. Drive people to the poll. The more people, and especially millennials, we get out to vote, the better our odds of survival get. As much as people want to say we can't turn this around, there's not a lot of off ramps, but there still are off ramps, and they all hinge on voting.
Brent, I've got to take it from there. We are out of time. Thank you so much for being on. Brody,
thank you
for being here as always. And I want to thank our listeners. And I think you got the major point. Get out and vote. If you do nothing else in the next few weeks, that has got to be the priority. And we will be back here next week, the same bat time, same bat channel. Also listen to Out in Santa Cruz, www.ksco.com. Saturday night, 7 p.m. Pacific time, and we will talk to you then.
You've been listening to Rated LGBT Radio.